This episode of the Chatting with Slim podcast is dedicated to the memory of an amazing educator, coach, and mentor to many young men and women, and someone who I got to know over the past year at Central Middle School, Coach Brandon O'Neill, who passed away suddenly a few days ago. And while I was already going to miss him in the halls of the middle school this upcoming school year, because he was transferred to the high school to become a PE teacher and the assistant football coach there, now a realization is hitting that I will not see my friend again, at least in this life. But don't worry, Brandon. Like we always say on the podcast, it's never goodbye. Just till next time, Coach. Till next time, though, we're gonna miss you. We are underway. As we say in the Navy, shift the colors. And let's get this bad boy out to sea finally. After 2.5 months on a summer break. Welcome back. We hope you've had a great summer. We hope you've had a safe summer. We hope you're staying safe with the unfortunate rise in spike in the COVID cases recently. And we're not going to really get into any political discussion with COVID-19 on this episode, but I did want to relay some of my experiences from a facilities maintenance standpoint on what the schools are generally doing to prepare for this upcoming school season, as well as lessons that we learned from last year that we are applying this year to help keep the staff, administration, the educators, and more importantly, the children in the schools safe. And while I understand that that's not specifically a topic that is considered veterans and active duty topic or something that would be awareness for my veterans community, I do know that there are a lot of people in general out there who are genuinely concerned. And I'll first say, while I can't speak for any school system in particular, I can tell you what we're doing in our school system, and basically in our part of the world, because unfortunately, I live in Louisiana. Firstly, it's very hot and humid right now with heat advisories every day. People are sweating in places they probably didn't even know existed, furthermore, even knew sweated. And unfortunately, we are near the bottom in the 50 states as far as vaccination rates and such. And number of cases here in Louisiana is rising pretty quick in some areas. And even though the coronavirus is spiking. That's kind of the hot thing now. One thing that's really not being talked about, actually in the veterans community and the active duty community, is that there's legislation in Congress currently for pay raises for the military in 2022. Also, the president is proposing a 10% increase to the VA budget for 2022. And of course, we just had the Olympics. And I really, really want to highlight the fact that we had 19 U.S. service members that competed for Team USA in Tokyo. As well as giving a quick shout out to Army Specialist Maura Spence. She's not an Olympic athlete, but she's an active duty Army Specialist, and she won the crown of Miss Colorado recently, and she's going to be competing for the title of Miss USA. I think that's pretty cool. It's very commendable. And we have an active duty Army soldier who is competing for Miss USA and representing the state of Colorado. First, though, I wanted to get into the legislation stuff, because that's really cut and dry, straightforward, if you ask me. Personally, I'm always going to be for any kind of pay raise that wants to be given to our military, or any budget increase that's going to be proposed for the Department of Veterans Affairs. What I always like to do in situations like this, more so, is to encourage everyone to go out and contact your elected officials. Make sure that they are voting yes on these bills and propositions so that our military will get pay raises that they need and that our VA will get the budget increase that it needs. Now, as far as the military pay raises, that is currently in the House of Representatives. It does have strong bipartisan support, which I like to see, especially being an independent, to see bipartisan support when it comes to a topic like military pay raises amongst the House of Representatives. I'm not really sure how the U.S. Senate will feel once it gets to the Senate, but hopefully that bill goes through both houses of Congress without a problem, and the president will sign it in to effect, and we can have a 2.7% pay raise for our military across the board. When you break down the numbers, the people that is going to really, really help the most are the younger soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines who are generally on their first enlistment and aren't generally making much. An entry-level private in the Army that's under 6 months but out of boot camp is being paid $20,000 a year, basically. The actual number is $20,172 before taxes are taken out of your income to serve this country and possibly die for it. And a lot of these young individuals, especially the ones who are married and with young infant children, are actually living below the poverty level. Most of them qualify for government assistance like WIC and welfare and SNAP, better known as food stamps. And some of these families don't apply for these benefits out of pride. Now let's face it, for as much as that service member sacrificing at such a young age, mind you, their family is sacrificing a lot as well. And that's not, I think, the way in this country we want to treat the people who make those sacrifices for the freedom and the liberty that we have in this country. So those pay raises will go a long way helping a lot of people. The only fear that I have with it is that once it reaches the Senate, the number will get caught up. And they start arguing over what the number should be and how much they should get. And then it gets stalemated or gridlocked, and then nothing gets passed, and then our military doesn't get a pay raise at all. Now let's hope that doesn't happen. Let's also hope that they can get a 10% increase in the fiscal spending bill for 2022 to increase the VA budget. Because that's a whole different monster when you're talking about a fiscal spending bill for encompassing all of the governmental departments. There's a lot of moving parts there. Again, that's where I say contact your elected officials. No matter how much you will feel on any other moving part of that legislation that you voiced to your elected official, tell them to leave the VA part of it alone. Now, if that elected official wants to increase the number, all the more better. Again, I hope the number doesn't get in an argument or gridlock, and that gets diminished somehow. Realize that the Department of Veterans Affairs already has the largest budget of any cabinet-level department in our government. Realize what I just said, and then realize that even with the largest budget of any department in our government, I think most people could agree that it's still not enough to take care of every veteran the way every veteran needs to be taken care of. I don't want to blast the Department of Veterans Affairs too much. I unfortunately have had some negative experiences. I know other veterans who have. I know veterans who've had nothing but positive experiences with the Department of Veterans Affairs. So there's a complete spectrum there of experiences. About $112 billion more will immensely help the Department of Veterans Affairs, because one of the biggest things they're lacking is mental health. They always have been behind in mental health assistance. And Lord knows they are trying, but there are a lot of determining factors that are helping to prevent that. One is the stigma in the general population around mental health. You look at the statistics for active duty military now with mental health. And like I said, the general public, you know, a lot of people have been sort of locked down for the past year and a half, on and off, and restrictions changing and increasing and decreasing, and you're seeing it play out with athletes. You saw it play out in the Olympics, where athletes were trying to bring awareness for mental health in their realm. So let's push these elected officials to get this legislation through when it does come up for the fiscal spending bill of 2022, so that our VA can get much needed money to continue the hard work of helping our veterans get health care and services that they need and deserve. Now again, I mentioned we just had the Olympics. And yes, 19 active duty service members represented Team USA in the Olympics. 17 Army soldiers, one Marine, and one Coast Guard sailor. They competed in various events. There were a few that competed in Olympic-style wrestling. There was a female Army Staff Sergeant competing in boxing. There was one track and field athlete, Specialist Bernard Keeter, that competed in the 3,000-meter steeplechase, which is an interesting enough event. And there were two modern pentathlon athletes, one male, one female, both Army. And there were a lot of active duty Army soldiers on our Team USA shooting team, which is good to know that our Army's being trained to shoot real well. They racked up a lot of medals in shooting, to say the least. And Bravo Zulu to them for that. Army First Lieutenant Amber English in women's shotgun skeet was actually the first U.S. Olympic athlete to win gold, and the first U.S. service member as well to win a gold in Tokyo. Now, there was a lot of hullabaloo before the Olympics about athletes and things that they were doing, and that's part of why I didn't address any of that, because I just didn't want to get into any of the noise. What I will say on the one situation that did occur during the Olympics with gymnast Simone Biles, people are going to have their opinions of that situation. I will say that I respect that woman more now as an individual than what I did before, because you got to see a human side of an athlete who is a celebrity and basically the goat of their sport have to make a decision on whether they're going to compete or not, and whether that's in the best interest of the team or not. That's a hard decision for any athlete to make. And I don't fault her for making the decision that she did. It's called self-preservation. And that's okay as a human being. You know, I always say, the will to live always outweighs your ability to die. I know that might seem like a harsh analogy in this instance, but consider when you're springboarding off of a large springboard over basically a padded 2x4, continuing to flip your body in midair, and you can't find the ground to land properly, on your 2 feet like you're supposed to, that can amount to some very serious injuries. If that young lady would have landed on her head or her neck, she could have broken her neck, fractured her skull. And it kind of upset me a little bit that people were giving her a hard time. I know some of them were just people that wanted to see Team USA win, but those people took it to an extreme with the fandom. It's really. And if you guys watched it play out, realistically, as the whole few days of those gymnastics played out, if you saw what I saw the goat of a sport pass the torch to the next generation of USA Gymnastics Olympians. So I say good on Simone Biles for bringing up the conversation of mental health. It needs to be talked about in all aspects of life. Your mental health is greatly intertwined with your physical health. It's especially important in these times nowadays. And the world is a crazy place right now. Obviously with COVID, there's obviously a lot of other things going on in the world and in our country. And I know with COVID specifically, it makes a lot of parents apprehensive to send their kids to in-person learning environment. And hey, rightfully so. But I am here to tell you that it can be done. It's not impossible, but it's not easy to keep a school running from a maintenance standpoint just to begin with. And then you throw pandemic restrictions and rules and things like that, and it makes the job of the support staff in the school a lot harder. It obviously makes it harder on the educators as well. And realize that every single employee in that school is also at somewhat of a risk just to make a living doing what most of them really love to do. And I'm exceptionally blessed that I work for a really good school system. A really good community of Central Louisiana, whose citizens refuse to accept nothing less than high quality schools, good looking schools, and a good quality education for their taxpayer dollar. Now, where my job comes in is that it's basically my responsibility to take the pressure of worrying about maintenance and upkeep or run down school at all away from the principal, away from the staff, and away from the teachers. More importantly, keep it away from the kids, because they deserve a safe and productive learning environment, regardless of the circumstances, regardless of any pandemic. Now, the pandemic has definitely given many, many school systems a real crash course in virtual schooling. Some schools were already gearing into virtual academies and virtual schooling. Others, not so much. Some are playing catch up. Some are ahead of the curve in that respect. But I did want to let most parents know that if you have a child that's in a school system that had in-person learning last school season, please do realize that there are lessons that were learned that are now being applied to this school season. And even though this summer there was a strong pivot 2 weeks before school started, as the dynamics of the rising cases started, so for many of the support staff, or at least my fellow coworkers, sentimented to me that this ain't our first rodeo. Now, the one thing that I'm not going to do at all, is sit and argue or discuss or try to debate anyone about a mask or a vaccine. I'm just not. The only thing that I will say about those two issues at all is I myself am vaccinated. I got vaccinated for my own reasons. I would hope people respect that based on the information that I did and an informed decision that I made for myself based on my situation. Considering that I have two high-risk people who live in my home. As well, I did my research enough on the vaccines to understand that even if it does not stop me from getting COVID-19, it will at least make it so that I am not as sick if I do get it. So my thought process at least was, why not get something to weather the storm until there is something that is more permanent? That was my choice. That was my decision. I know there are people that make their own decisions for their own reasons, and I have to respect that, because every human being's situation is different. Now, I do urge people to educate themselves properly on the issues and not just believe social media and news media alone to make your decision. Now, as far as the masks, the only thing that I will say with that is unless you're willing to ask medical professionals in a hospital to take their masks off, I don't want to hear you talking about masks or no masks. That's where I stand on it, and just not going to argue with anyone about it. But realistically, everyone, schools are doing a hell of a lot more than masks. Vaccines. Doing a hell of a lot more. The maintenance and custodial staff at most schools, as well as most teachers, are burdened with extra things. Teachers are burdened with wiping down desks throughout the day with disinfectant cleaner. That's normally a custodian's job at the end of the school day. But because of coronavirus, it has to be done constantly throughout the day. If your school's doing it right, they have the water fountains turned off so that there will not be cross-contamination from one child using it who could possibly be sick, and another child coming and using a water fountain behind them. What we did in our schools was we installed laser eye, no touch bottle fillers. And the kids are asked to bring a water bottle with them. And they can also be provided one by the school. And they get to fill their water bottle. And they're actually able to have their water with them in class as well. They're able to drink it in class, which they normally wouldn't be able to do. They would normally have to go out in the hall, take a sip from the water fountain, and go back to class. So sort of a disturbance to class. It actually has helped in that aspect for them to have be able to have a water bottle in class with them. So we've actually learned that even after coronavirus, we're going to keep the bottle fillers, and we're going to keep letting them have water bottles because it's just a more efficient thing. Maybe some of them will use the restroom more, but that is what it is. It's really more about efficient, productive classrooms, right? And like, I know I touched on some of the education side that I see, and I'm not a part of because I'm not an educator. I'm a facilities maintenance person, but I mean, a lot of schools are making changes. Now realize that most schools were never built and designed for social distancing. So that in and of itself has sort of been an issue probably for almost any school in the country, or any school in the world for that matter. Also realize that until May of 2020 was being done in education right now, never been done before in the history of education. And as someone in facilities maintenance, I will say, because I've seen this from someone who's a parent, said that their child in a school district in Ohio is in fourth grade, and he's not so angry that they necessarily have a mask mandate, but he's angry that they're enforcing the mask mandate while these children sit in a school for 8 hours that's still under renovation with no air condition. And what I actually reached out to that person and said that realistically that is on the school board locally. Mask or not, you don't put children in a building with no air conditioning. Especially in the middle of August, anywhere in this country right now, with all the heat advisories. Goodness, if that's the case, you might as well put them in a hot car and roll up all the windows. Because a good working ventilation system with good filters, systems, and especially if you have UV lighting systems installed in your ventilation systems, like we have, to kill bacteria and mold spores for better air quality, then you can effectively mitigate the spread of certain things. As well, it prolonged the life of the HVAC system by mitigating mold in the HVAC ducts. Now, I do want to make it clear that UV lighting will not kill viruses. So it's not going to kill corona. It's not going to kill flu. It does kill bacteria. It does kill any mold. And that gives a better air quality. It actually creates less surface dust on surfaces in the school, which makes the job of the custodians a little bit easier when they go to clean. And in these cases, for the past year, when the teachers are having to now assist the custodians with the cleaning, and so is the maintenance staff, I mean, these everyone is now responsible to do a little more to ensure the safety of the kids and ourselves. Every teacher has access to a plethora of bottles of disinfectant spray, hand sanitizer. We even at our schools took soap dispensers that we would use in the bathrooms. We had them on the shelf as spares to repair the ones that get broken in our bathrooms at the schools. And we literally mounted them on stanchion poles and talked to the vendor who sells us the hand soap. And they said, hey, we sell hand sanitizer as well. So then we started buying hand sanitizer, started putting it in those soap dispensers, putting them out in the hallways, at the entrances, and turn points in the hallways where people come in and out. So they can have hand sanitizer readily available at all times throughout the school. As far as plumbing is concerned with schools, yes, water fountains should be turned off. It's nice if you have bottle fillers, especially if kids are trying to fill bottles out of normal water fountains. They generally make a mess all over the place, on the floor, all over the water fountain. So, if your kid's school doesn't have bottle fillers, laser eye, like bottle fillers, you just put a bottle under it, fills it up with water, pull it away, it stops the water stream. Very, very handy. Very useful even without coronavirus around in a school. In most of our bathrooms that were three sink bathrooms at the wash station area, all the middle sinks got turned off for social distancing. If the bathroom or restroom itself has three stalls for three kids to use the restroom, and only three kids will be allowed in the bathroom at a time. If even that, sometimes maybe two or one, depending upon the volume of kids that have to go use the restroom at the same time from one class. Now, last year we actually had these thermal sensors that were hooked up to a laptop or a large like camera tripod, and they look like large motion sensors is what they look like, or big cameras, and you can look at a computer screen and watch about 5 or 6 or 7 different people pass, and it tags or it highlights their head very much like a tag on a photo, and it can read off their temperature. Now they realize that with these a lot of new cases of COVID that are coming out, that a lot of the normal symptoms aren't applying, and a lot of people are asymptomatic, so they felt like it was almost an unneeded resource this year, an unnecessary step to take that we're not doing yet, at least, but we did do last year. And obviously most school systems also have policies and procedures in place for situations where someone tests positive for COVID-19. I can tell you that in our school system, if a child or teacher test positive while at the school, it is a very fun experience for myself, the maintenance person, because that classroom has to be shut down. All the children in the classroom and the teacher as well gonna have to have a COVID test to make sure that they had not become infected as well. And then that's when I have to get in this crazy looking suit and freak everybody out because they look like a dang bomb technician. To have to go in a room with a electrostatic sprayer and spray the room down and then quarantine the room for 24 hours. And even though a lot of the new cases are asymptomatic, they still have guidelines for various symptoms. That they would prefer your child to stay home if they have. And when you really look at the list of these symptoms, as a parent, these are things that you would keep your kid home for almost anyways. If they're running a fever, if they're vomiting, if they've got diarrhea, chills, muscle pain, runny nose, congestion, headache, sore throat. 9 times out of 10, you're going to keep them home for that anyways, whether it's COVID or not. And most school systems won't let you have a child come to school if they're running a fever. Most school systems won't allow the child back until at least 24 hours after the fever is broken. Some school systems are 48 hours after the fever is broken that the child can actually return, because they don't want to get other children sick. That's the whole premise of this. It's not getting anyone sick. And I'll say, is it perfect? No, that there are bumps in the road here and there. But if you have a staff and administration and a good support staff, and a good community that's all on the same page, and they all want the same thing, and they all work together to do it, then your child can be safe. while in-person learning, no matter what grade level they are. Because it's very important to have in-person learning at the younger ages. That is the most key developmental time for these children to gain their social skills, learning how to interact with other kids their own age. You don't want to wait till they get to middle school to start interacting them with other kids their age. You want to do that when they're young, so that they have good people skills and just know how to treat everyone with a level of decent human respect. So that starts at the younger grades. And again, that's very, very vital. A lot of parents I see saying that their kids were virtual, and in virtual, their kids were falling behind. Now, the only thing that I ask parents through this whole thing is just to take a deep breath and take a half of a step back for a second. Tilt your head a little bit differently and adjust your gaze off of the 2 inches that are right in front of your face. And look at the surroundings. And try to use just common sense when it comes to the safety of the kids. And don't make it up some kind of a political stance. You know, if a child has a valid reason for not wearing a mask, they have some type of disability that prevents them from wearing a mask, then that's perfectly fine and understandable. But man, these people that are just politicizing the issue of masks and vaccines, and it's on both sides, the right and the left. The whole issue to me is just more about just trying to respect human beings and stop hating people just because you disagree with one thing. And realize that we as human beings are a lot more similar than what we are different. If we concentrate on that, and we start from a common ground, and we stop as a society outwardly looking for things to possibly offend us, if we just help our neighbors do nice and courteous things just because it's the right thing to do with no expectation of anything in return, and the Olympics proves that despite all the world's problems, the entire world can gather together in one place, at one time, at one moment, in the spirit of athletic competition, and come together in peace. I like to think that if we can do that on this earth, once every 4 years for a few weeks, that if we really, really tried, that we could do it all the time. Always. Every day. All day. And wouldn't that be something of a world to live in? Now, I wanted to end the podcast in a little bit more of a typical way, getting back to awareness for issues and topics that involve our veterans and active duty military, as well as their families. Because I never liked doing a podcast without at least pointing out one organization that's doing good work for the veterans community, active duty military, and our families. It's every podcast. There are over 45,000 nonprofit organizations in this country that are just designed for veterans, active duty military, and their families. Now, these organizations would be there, regardless of whether we had a Department of Veterans Affairs or not. But more and more lately, our veterans are starting to have to rely on these nonprofits more and more and more due to the overwhelming backlog and just bulk of everything that the VA has thrown at them right now. And we can't get complacent enough in this country to expect the nonprofits to be a safety net or to be the only safety net against a poorly run Department of Veterans Affairs. And on this episode of the podcast, I wanted to talk just a little bit about a nonprofit organization called the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors, better known as TAPS. It provides a variety of programs to offer compassionate care, programs, resources, and relationships for survivors of fallen military personnel. This is an organization that helps spouses and children of fallen military members. They do a lot of great and amazing work for families of fallen military members. Now, you can help this great organization by just going to taps.org. And on the main page that loads, there are two options to click on and ask you if you are a survivor and ask you how you can help. They just recently had a program called Fill the Backpack to support TAPS kids with heading back to school, providing backpacks filled with school supplies. You can go on their website, you can click there about me, see what the mission is. You can see what resources are available, what programs are available, and how you can support them in all of the great work that they do. It's not even about just donating money. You can help if you want to volunteer your time with the organization. There are survivor care teams. There's a suicide loss support group. There's also a lot of education assistance programs for spouses of fallen military members to help either get and or finish college degrees, as well as educational assistance programs for the children of fallen service members so that they have college available to them as well. So if you're someone that has been a counselor before or really wants to help in that capacity, they could definitely use your assistance. There are a lot of great veterans organizations that could use the assistance of good counselors, to say the least. And again, if you so choose, you can donate charitably to TAPS through their website. Again, that is TAPS.org. And that is the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. Well, that's going to be all my time for this podcast. I won't take up any more of your time. But you can check us out on social media. We're on Twitter at Chatting with Slim. We're on Instagram, Chatting with Slim Podcast. You can also check my personal Facebook, Joshua Sanamont. I just don't go under Slim on Facebook. And it's entirely impossible for me to manage multiple social media accounts for multiple names. I'm too busy for that aspect, at least right now. We are still a bit new to the Instagram platform, though we have been on Twitter for a while. And I also post all podcast stuff on my personal Facebook. Our episodes air on the 15th of every month. So our next episode will be September 15th, which is a Wednesday, to be specific. So we hope you'll join us again for that episode. Again, you can go and check out previous episodes of the podcast, all your major streaming apps, wherever you're taking this in from, whether that be Spotify, Anchor, Google Podcasts, Breaker Audio, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, the list is growing, thankfully, and appreciatively. And I wanted to give a last final Bravo Zulu shout out to a new friend of mine and any friend of the podcast, hopefully, a fellow veteran who I have been able to see on social media sort of from afar, that is quite an inspiration to many. His name is Matthew Bradford. And go check this guy out. He will be an inspiration to you because he is a double amputee Firstly, he's a Marine. And he's a double amputee. He's not an active duty Marine, but he's a Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine. And I was Navy. They are a part of the Department of the Navy. Although they don't like to admit that. But he's a Marine. He's a double amputee. He does have prosthetics from the knee down on both legs. He's also blind. And his hashtag on all of his social media is no legs, no vision, no problem. This guy works out often and lives about as full a life as you probably live for almost anyone. He does not let his perceived handicaps be tremendous handicaps. If you wanna know why this guy to me is an impressive human being in many, many respects, the double amputee blind, and he plays golf. He posted a video recently of him teeing off on a par 3, and from the tee box, got it on the green. So, hopefully you were able to birdie that hole, Matt. I don't know how well you putt, but inspirational guy. Go check him out on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Again, no legs, no vision, no problem. Look for that hashtag, and you guys won't regret having checked this guy out. Finally, my prayers go out to the O'Neill family, and my condolences as well. And my prayers and condolences go out to anyone who knew Coach Brandon O'Neill from Central High School in Central Louisiana. But again, with me, I don't ever like having to say goodbye. I always feel there will be a next time in this life or the next. So, with that being said, until next time, be good. Be good to each other, more importantly. I'm going to miss you, Coach O'Neill. And remember, live a life worth their sacrifice. Because Arlington National Cemetery is over 62 acres. Of why we are free in this country. Thank you again, and we'll see you next time.
Chatting with Slim Podcast.